recording. Yeah,
it is.
One of them is because he got your call, George, regarding the forest down there, because DTI has contributed significantly to part of the value addition process, and Labour had requested that we be present, and we were only able to get one person. So he was already going to George on our behalf. Then we had a valid apology from the Honourable Mr. Lewis. Is he on the party business? Is that what it is? Or at another committee? Party business, right. I'm not sure why we've got the other two apologies. Those are two. Honourable Shivambu's on party business, and we haven't received any other. That leaves Honourable Mantashna. I'm not sure you would get Whittington just to clarify that. Yes, I saw her, that's why I wasn't too sure she could be on her way now. And there is Honourable Clarko as well. So we have a full team in respect of some parties. This is an important item on the agenda, and I'm glad most of us are here. On that note, can we please have the adoption of this proposal for the adoption of the agenda? We try to keep it to 11 o'clock. Honourable Williams, seconded by, yes, the Honourable McPherson. We're going to immediately, Minister, we really appreciate you being here because I know you've also got to go somewhere else. And also the DG, Mr. September, But of course, both those surnames have a very historical meaning in the struggle for all of us. So, you know, I'm sure one doesn't find too much a little sympathy. But I do apologise. Yes, on the way.
Thanks, Chairperson. Just some housekeeping before we begin, because I think it's important. At the portfolio committee meeting last week, Tuesday, I raised the issue of the company's tribunal audits, which the Honourable Hillary has tabled before the committee for discussion and possible hearings. You had indicated to me that you would come back by Wednesday this week to discuss the way forward. I would just like to get some feedback in regards to that, please.
Yes, I also indicated probably Tuesday, or maybe it was Wednesday, that there are some occasions where one would like to wait until the person who has tabled it is present. I haven't really got a position from ANCO in this regard, but if you recall, Arnold Hill Lewis wasn't present at that time, you see. You were. And it's always better, if, as far as possible, to do that. It's a simple one. If he walks in today, we can make that known. But I'd rather do it with him being present, as he is the mover in this regard. Yes?
Thanks, Jefferson. He has asked me to address this on his behalf, and he would like a response today. So if you can convey that response.
It's not my normal practice, Honourable McPherson. If I start doing that, then I'll be taking and doing it with many others. But in this case, that is the way the DA is, proposing to operate. It's very simple. This, as it turns out, is an outdated document. And what I do have here, in respect of this one, sorry, it's the second one, is we did make inquiries as agreed to the Minister ourselves in this regard, and we do have a letter in that regard, which I had asked staff to make a copy of so that we could address it, but that is when the Honourable Hill Lewis is present. And I think it can wait, but essentially it indicates what the facts are, and it also indicates that to some extent it's outdated. So we haven't got an actually voter status at the moment, and I would want to do that so all members have a copy. So I do want to read it there and give a copy of it.
I would welcome you to walk us through that if possible. If not, the Honourable Minister has made announcements on his views on that audit and the contents of it, and with him here and with his indulgence, maybe he could make that known to us.
If he was a minister, just said, look, the Honourable Minister, you know, if you haven't, you know, this was proposed, I asked for the agenda to be adopted. It was proposed by Honourable William, and you actually seconded it. And normally when you have a reservation, as you have on one or two occasions, you've chosen to raise them at that point. Now, as a matter of fact, that's why I'm looking for the Honourable William. So we're not going to entertain it today. You will get a copy of it. Well, I think that it's we have to accept we won't agree on everything. We're certainly not going to change the way we operate in principle, because I think it's a fair way to operate when people who raise an issue are present. And that's the way I think this committee has operated. Thank you very much. We're going to go to what I call an equally challenging item in trade and industry, and that is the National Gambling Board issue. And I'm not going to delay you, Minister, if you could immediately address the matter, you and your team. Thank you.
Well, thanks very much, Chairperson. Chairperson, we've got two presentations. The one is the item on the agenda, which is about the performance report for October to December last year, actually given by the two accounting authorities, Caroline Congre and Fernanda Valeni. I'm going to speak to basically the forensic investigation. I'm going to speak to the way in which we see the National Gambling Board and its structure changing and why. And then I'm going to talk a little bit about the policy framework that has been developed or is being developed in the National Gambling Policy Council. So let me start off then with to say those are a few of the slides. Some of them are background, and I'm not going to go into them very much. Mandate functions, the legislative authority, then the investigation, the forensic investigation, and then issues of the broad issues of how we see the National Gambling Board evolving, its strategic focus, some statistics about gambling, which I think are informing some of the policy choices which we are beginning to develop in the policy council. So let me move on. That's just to say that the executive authority to whom the board is accountable is myself as a Minister of Trade and Industry. The mandate of the board is to coordinate concurrent national provincial competence. There's a whole lot of other things that are said there. Then the functions of the board are determined in Section 33 and 65 of the Act. Essentially what it does is it does not issue licenses. It most of the licenses to operate are issued by provinces. The one exception is the Zonkiwi monitoring system. There's compliance with the monitoring. Compliance with the licenses has to be monitored by the National Gambling Board. It conducts oversight. It has a very important role in the fourth bullet to assist provincial authorities to ensure that unlicensed gambling activities are detected, in other words, to stamp out illegal gambling. Then it's supposed to do monitoring and evaluation research work, conduct public awareness and education, and advise the Minister and the Council on gambling matters. And then only right at the end, and I think this is probably one of the issues, interact with other foreign and international authorities. So what happened was that the background to the forensic investigation, which I'm going to report on what I can on this, during July 2014, the Auditor General conducted the statutory audit into the National Gambling Board, the usual investigation, and it basically reported on a number of breaches of the PFMA by board members, either collectively or individually, and including acts of omission and potential acts of commission. That was the background, is the Auditor General's report. And then we took a decision after also receiving a written protected disclosure by an employee of the Gambling Board to conduct a forensic investigation. Now, I have to make an indication that last year, on the basis of the information that was given to me, I did indicate that we were expecting this forensic report to have been completed by the end of last year. There wasn't anything that in my ability to change, but we were told that later on that there were things that were taking more time, and so the provisional report is only just submitted to us now. So the report that I'm going to summarize some parts of contains preliminary review, analysis and documentation, and interviews which will be taken to date. And basically, the forensic auditors, a number of things that they haven't verified, authenticity or validity of all the documentation, that's what they say. These are the cautions they put in the report. And so this presentation which we're giving today is solely to inform portfolio committee members of the preliminary findings and subject to all the limitations which I mentioned above, which have been set by the forensic investigators themselves. The management comments on the report are still pending. Basically also individuals that have been mentioned in the report are still, as you have to come back with their comments before there's a final report. So what we're going to give is an indication of the systemic issues, the general issues that were identified and not the allegations that were relating to individuals. So what were the allegations? That there was contravention of PFLA, the irregular fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred by the Borders and Accounting Authority. What were the findings? If there was indeed irregular expenditure, $3,600,000 and fruitless and wasteful expenditure of $66,000 in the financial year ending 2014. And what have we done about it, or what have the authority done? Established internal controls were made relating to management of expenditure, strengthened the controls. The Auditor General, there were other findings about failed to take steps to prevent irregular expenditure. There is now a verification certification of supply chain management processes and confirmation of budget allocations by the Chief Financial Officer. Then there were further findings. The appointment of a law firm, which was costing $2.2 million, was also regular, not in accordance with the Constitution and the supply chain prescripts. And the regular expenditure also incurred of $507,000. Then there was another $435,000 of irregular expenditure in irregular procurement of other legal firms. And then what's happened here is we've cancelled the contracts, internal controls have been established about the appointment of legal firms and all representatives through the Office of the State Attorney. Then, another allegation, contravention of the Act, in particular, continued involvement of former board members without the minister's approval, such members having drawn large payments, as reported in the annual report, which was also reported in the AG's findings. What are the findings of the investigation? Former board members did continue to serve as the board beyond their term expiry without approval. The board failed to comply with supply chain management prescripts in procuring consulting and other services from previously appointed board members because some of those former board members were then drawn in as consultants. R140,000 of irregular expenditure was incurred and the accounting authority failed to take effective steps to prevent this irregular expenditure. There are further possible irregular expenditure claims that are currently held in abeyance, but you'll see there's no board any longer, so the issue of expired board members continuing to play a role is no longer an issue. Then there's open administration of the trust account, which is in violation of Treasury regulations, which this is a trust account about where forfeitures of legal winnings were held. The trust was established, wasn't established legally. The NGP failed to ensure that the trust was deregistered. There was no approval sought to open the trust accounts. Two accounts were manually opened. There was an amount of money there that bring that. And the NGP failed to discharge its duties to apply to the High Court for declaratory orders to declare legal winnings to be forfeited to the state. The trust has now been deregistered. All the irregularly opened trust accounts have been closed. and it initiated a process to obtain the declaratory orders on illegal winnings to be forfeited to the state. Also in the same item, the NGV failed to ensure a compliance of framework for strategic plans and annual performance plans and failed to disclose the existence of the trust. The NGV and its trustees failed to ensure the trustees get proper accounts. New accounts as the open monies are currently held in trust in compliance with the Gambling Act. And the annual financial statements of a deregistered trust will be prepared together with all our annual financial statements. NGV's use of a bank's overdraft to commence that allegation. And it's here with the findings. The NGV does not have an overdraft facility. The banking institution at its discretion allowed the account to be overdrawn on 5 occasions at the bank's risk. The maximum amount which was overdrawn was $125,000. NGV failed to exercise adequate oversight to ensure proper cash flow. The NGV transferred amount of $150,000 from a credit card account into the NGV current account for cash flow contrary to the PMA. The batch of allocations has been reprioritized in the areas where there was a possible expenditure, and we've approved a revised budget with projection of surplus at the end of the financial year, which should make any call on a overdraft not necessary. Then procurement of the National Central Electronic Monitoring System and the establishment of the NGV Electronic Monitoring System Subcommittee. The NGV formed a new subcommittee, appointed 9 persons to the board, 6 board members and 3 former board members as consultants. No minutes and recordings of the majority of the meetings are available, and the management of the process for the sourcing of the next instance operator was flawed. An internal operational NGV project team has been established to deal with this, and this is the limited power machines that are centrally monitored, and it's a contract for that. Then there was an unusually large number of board meetings and subcommittee meetings. That was the allegation. Here are the facts that there were 13 board meetings and 10 audit committee meetings in 2012-13. The allegation of a substantial increase of board meetings during 2014 is correct. The significant increase in meetings is not warranted and linked to year-on-year fee increment by certain board members of 21.39, 21.26, and 38% respectively. We don't have board meetings any longer because we have now an intervention which we don't have a board. The investigation of the current office lease, that was the next issue, that there was an issue about the office lease. The Department of Public Works space norms indicate that the NGV requires 714 square meters of space, but it actually needs to build in with more 1,800, that's more than double. Office space is because we have to utilize the current premises about 3 times what that which is occupied at the GTI campus, which is with the NGV occupied at the GTI campus. The NGV failed to ensure that the funding was approved prior to committing to a 10-year lease. The 2012 tender process was merely concluded to regularize the selection of the appointments of the lessor. Current lease premises were already identified and visited in 2010 through a quotation process, despite lease expenditure exceeding $500,000, which requires another process. Measures have been considered to rectify the underutilization, and we're awaiting further recommendations. 2 of the 3 bids evaluated were from the same group of legal entities, that's another funding. In April 2012, the NGV formed the lessor that had been appointed as a preferred service provider. The current office lease at the NGV had approved entering into that lease in September already. In September, the NGV was committed to a revised budget for tenants and installations of relocation of $40 million. And this is found to be irregular. It was irregular for the NGV to condone and consent to a 100% fee service increase with a service advisor. Measures have been considered to rectify the underutilization of the office space, and we await further recommendations. The same goes. Governance and capacity within the NGV and the lack of approved policies and procedures and poor retention of information. Not all the required approved policies and procedures are in place to guide the operations of the entity. There's a lack of signed minutes, missing recordings. These are all indicative of poor governance. These are the findings of the forensic team. The holding of regularly committee meetings without recordings is contrary to best practice, and the attendance by former board members whose terms have expired is a governance irregularity. Finance and ICT policies have been reviewed and are still to be approved, But of course, since we don't have a board any longer, that term doesn't So those are the forensic findings as far as I'm able to report them. As I said, they're still subject to finalization, they're still subject to comment, and I have left out findings that touch any individuals. But I think they do tell us that there is a sorry story, and I think we have to, in the first instance, thank the Auditor General for the diligent work which has led us to uncover this and put in place the remedial action that we have put in. But let me say also that this episode has also led us to reflect on broader issues. What were the strategic focuses and strategic weaknesses of the National Lobbying Board as we saw them? And I think that really there are quite a number of serious weaknesses that we have uncovered. To some extent, the board was conducting one of its functions, which was research and analysis of trends. That function is still there and needs to be built on. That was one of the things they're supposed to do. But the part of it, which was about acting against legal gambling operations in the country, the enforcement was woefully inadequate. And in fact, was being run down. That was the big finding we found. And I think that, as you all know, in other entities, we are raising the question of why a board structure is necessary and making changes where we think a board structure is not necessary. And so I think that the draft gambling policy review document, which was tabled for the National Gambling Policy Council, proposes that we reposition the National Gambling Board as a regulator. The National Gambling Board, with the exception of the NSINs, does not issue licenses and tenders. And the provinces issue gambling licenses. So its role is not the same as the provinces. So if the provinces have a board to decide on who gets what gambling license, that is not the same role as the gambling, National Gambling Board, as it's called. So I think that what we need is that really, I don't think we've decided on the final name, but we say that it would be really the National Gambling Regulator, where it should be the regulator. And we want to put the regulators, as you already know from the National Regulator for Policy Specifications, we don't see a logic for why is the liquor regulator in the Department of Gambling Regulator is outside. It deals with exactly the same issues as the provinces, even if the licenses or retail, national, only issues for wholesale and manufacturing, but it plays a sort of oversight coordination regulatory mode. So I think that what we say is that we're bringing in the categories for the trade. It's not something which is said in the product, but it's that would be the category. And that's one of the things that we really need to jack up is the effectiveness of the NGG being legal gambling. And also to enhance what was there to some degree its research capacity to be able to analyze trends in gambling, both in South Africa and also internationally. The board as a structure will be removed in line with this decision to remove boards in regulatory entities to improve effectiveness. What do we think the role would be? This is just basically expanding on what I said. The oversight function to facilitate policy coherence and coordination between national and provincial. Research and trend analysis, education and awareness needs to combat illegal gambling. Problem gambling and oversight in respect of the National Responsible Gambling Program. Ensure effective operation of the central monitoring system and then norms and standards. And trends in the industry have been reviewed in finalizing policy proposals in the future of the gambling board. So I'm going to just go a little bit now into the gambling policy framework. It's, as I said, still being discussed. It's going to be finalized within the gambling policy council, which is a consultative body. And when that consultation is over, we'll bring the final versions into Parliament. But I just want to go through a little bit of a few statistics that I think are telling us something of a story which is influencing us in the way we look at the issues. So first of all, this is the gross gambling revenue in South Africa, this is a total of 17.9 billion. That's the total gross gambling revenue in South Africa. That's not small. That's pretty high. Which is the biggest part of it? It's casinos, which is 13 billion, and Then we have betting, that was horse racing fundamentals, 2.6 billion. Then we have limited payout machines, which is nearly 1.6 billion. And then we have bingo. And I'll count bingo in a minute because bingo is different sorts of things, but bingo is 814 million. So it's a sizable, this is the problem. Then this one gives us a breakdown by the provinces. So you can see that the biggest province is Gauteng, it's followed by KZN, the left, then followed by the Western Cape, and then there are the other provinces, the Eastern Cape, Northwest, and then the others are all much, much smaller. That's until December last year. This is a picture which I think is pretty interesting. We saw, over a number of years, we saw growth in gross gambling revenue significantly in excess of the rate of growth in the economy, which meant that the propensity to gamble was increasing continuously. But what's happened in more recent years, and if you look at the last year, the year in this financial year, the figure I gave already is 17.9 billion. You can see that what happened was there was an increase in the previous 2 years, now there's a drop. That also happened with the offset of the recession. And if you look at the different modes, you'll see that the casinos in the last financial year, 16.4, now 12.9. The limited payout machines, 1.7 they were, now it's 1.5. The betting, the horse racing, 2.8, now 2.6. The one that's growing, I'll tell you why in a bit, is bingo, 732 to 815,000. That's what it is. So I think that what we draw from this is that, well, we have choices as a country. We have choices. This is not an infinitely expandable industry where everything can go. We have to make choices. If we choose one mode, another mode will be competed against and may go down. Some of the modes are already going down. If we choose to say that anything that is going and coming to South Africa, what will also happen is they will have to, quote unquote, open new markets. What does that mean? That means they will have to go into sections of the population which are not currently much gambled, and that's going to mean that they will have to start touching more ordinary working people, poor people, low income people, and so on. And I think that the conclusion that we are beginning to reach, and this is in the policy discussion, is that we need to start off by asking ourselves a very fundamental question. Which are the modes of gambling which give us the best in terms of investment, in terms of jobs, in terms of related activities, including industrial activities or agricultural activities, which are the forms that give us much less in terms of that? And our conclusion is that, well, the casinos, all of them invest in a fixed site. I'm not betting for the casinos, I'm making an analysis. They have a fixed site. They invest significantly in hotels, entertainment, and tourist facilities in addition to the gambling. They, by the way, would not do the rest if they didn't have the gambling, but they do that. They also have employment, which is generally higher in the construction and also in the operation of the facility. They do things like have cultural events and things like that, which they bring into those facilities. Not that every measure that we require to make sure that the casino supporters of the responsible gambling is working wonderfully. I think there are many, many challenges. But generally speaking, we get more jobs, more investment, more ancillary activities out of casinos. Horse racing. Horse racing feeds to this committee as well. Horse racing is linked to agriculture, farming, horses, horse breeding. We have international competitiveness in horse breeding. That industry, I think, you'll see, is the only legal form in the apartheid days when the casinos can't compete with them now. They say they have difficulty. What are the potential new modes? Online gambling. Online gambling, which would basically mean that we have corner shops, internet cafes on high streets, offering essentially the same kind of games in many respects as the casinos do, casino type games. Our analysis is that the level of investment, the level of job creation is much lower,
it would compete the other people casinos in the respect, and it would mean that we are basically going to be also supporting much of the ICT hardware which is linked to those is located offshore. Many of the companies that want to come here have their main hardware located offshore and Channel Islands and other places of the world. I think we also are very aware that we are not, as I already said about the analysis we made of the performance of the gambling room, we are not sufficiently robust in mapping out illegal activities. Actually, when I meet the legal people, they tell us right across the street that there are illegal activities taking place. And so I think that we really are in a position where the conclusion we are reaching is we've got to draw a line somewhere. We can't have everything. We can't have everything going. We've got to draw a line somewhere. And we don't see any real benefit of allowing online casino activities to take place. The other big bullet of being light is the bingo. I showed you the bingo with the one that was increasing. Now, bingo was conceived of, I think, when the policy was set originally in the 1990s. It was conceived of as people sitting in a hall and somebody shouts out the numbers and you tip them off. That's not very popular in South Africa. And what is happening now is you've got something called electronic bingo. Now, some of that may be that you do effectively play the bingo game but with an electronic machine. But some of that has got, as the phrase goes, the look and feel of a casino. Effectively, it is a casino game with a pull the handle and you get, instead of 3 sevens, you get bingo numbers or something. It's effectively a casino. And I think what we've seen there is we've seen, and this is an issue which we were debating, frankly, with provinces, and I believe you also in contact with one of the provinces, that there is a propensity in some places to roll out these things as mini casinos. Now, I think this is actually the other question. Do we want mini casinos in every shopping center masquerading as bingo halls? Is that what we want to capture? And I think what we're saying is we're saying that given the way the industry is evolving, given an analysis of what benefits us the most and what benefits us least, given what is likely to prey on low-income people, what is more likely to be more insulated, we don't feel that there is a case for any new form of gambling to be licensed in statute. Nor do we believe that it is an absolute foregone conclusion that if there is a new form of gambling, it has to come to South Africa. Nor do we believe, and we want to send this message out very, very clearly, because it may be that in the future people take a different decision, but we feel for now no new forms. But anybody who operates illegally in South Africa under the presumption that eventually they will be legalized ought to understand that they will not be licensed to get the license. Anybody who's here operating illegally now, running illegal online sites, will be the ones that don't get the license. I think we want to say that very, very clear. The second thing I think we want to say is that there are ways that we can stop this. We may not find it that easy to stop you putting up your website. We will certainly indicate to everybody that if you play, you'll play an illegal game. You have no defense, no recourse. If you get ripped off, you get ripped off. But what we can do is we can stop winnings going through the banking system. Why do people play? If you want to play and you want to lose, maybe you won't catch you to sit in your room and play the game. And you play, and you take down a credit card and you're on 18 and they say you have to be 18. Who's going to check out? Maybe you'll be able to pay a payment. If you win, your winnings will not go to the banking system. An illegal transaction, and you will not be paying your taxes. You will be a criminal if you play like that. And we will take action against anybody who operates the system in South Africa. And we will take action, and we are also talking to the institution in Treasury that deals with the money laundering to tighten up our control systems. Because actually, gambling winnings, the inverted commas, or alleged gambling winnings is one of the big forms of money laundering. And so I think that's what we're saying. So what we're saying is we're saying we have to make choices. The choices will be on job creation, investment, and social impact. The framework for electronic bingos, we're going to have to limit the licenses of this. We think that there are some improvements in the horse racing environment, because I think we do need to horse racing is one of the better ones. We make some proposals about And then we've discussed this. We've got to finish the consultation in the National Police Council. And when we've done that, then we will table a final draft policy and bills go to cabinet and to parliament. And we hope that the policy and the bill will be published by the end of the committee. So the conclusion, DTI remains committed to strive to achieve 0% in regulatory expenditure. That's in our own department, and I think we'll be close to that this year. I think I'm very hopeful that we will achieve that, but also in all the entities that report us. Some of them have done that already, and where we find instances of transgressions, we will act. I think we've been extraordinarily transparent in this meeting this morning about the findings that we're able to review. Optimal oversight, we need regular communication to the management and the NGB, and we will assess the findings and recommendations to ensure that there is effective implementation of the measures recommended to prevent irregularities. So that's what I wanted to present to you before the performance report of the NGB administrator. So thank you very much, Chairperson.
You have been, Frank. Thank you very much. That transparency is really appreciated. But like yourself, we have a number of issues and questions we'd like to raise. I recognise Honourable Macpherson, Honourable Kernhoff, Honourable Williams, and yourself, Connie, Honourable Malakalako.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, Minister. We certainly welcome this report. And you see that there's a lot of hard work going into the forensic investigation. I mean, I think suffice to say that what we've seen is a group of people gambling with people's money, and the taxpayers' money, our budget, and it's quite sickening to see some of the findings. But I think what we also need to look at, or what I'd like some answers from you, Minister, is there have to be DPI officials that are implicated in some of these issues, particularly with the lease contract. There is no way that could have been signed off at three times the normal rate, the usage being outside of the required needs, and no DPI official flagged that either to the Director General or to yourself. So what is being done to look at that specific issue, and will action be taken against any officials that are implicated in any form of findings? And because we certainly don't want to see that they'll just found another home in another entity. Minister, also, will criminal charges be laid against any of the board members that are found to have contravened laws around the corruption and illegal expenditure of monies, and will money rightfully spent be recovered from them as well? I think that that's a very important thing. Regarding the NTEM's tender, this is a it's certainly a billion rand contract. If the NGB only receives 111,000 rand per year in the license fee from that, I find that quite extraordinary. And it seems bizarre that the NGB almost have been self-funded if they were getting a better percentage of the NTEM's contract. Minister, the question to you, how was such bad governance allowed to take place for so long and unchecked with regards to this? Just in answer to the gambling, Minister, I want to fundamentally disagree with you on the issue of online gambling. It's happening regardless, and I think that if we don't regulate it, if we don't bring it under an umbrella, all we're going to do is lose out on revenue. That's going to continue to take place. And I think that we have an opportunity to create a framework that brings online gaming into South Africa, that can create jobs, and can keep the revenue onshore. Electronic bingo, those many casinos are already in place. Go to Gateway Shopping Centre in Umhlanga, Sandton City, they're already there. And that's because we know that the provinces have gone ahead regardless and issued these licenses. Despite the letter from yourself in October to me saying that no licenses would be issued, they were just issued regardless from the provinces. And I think that that's where there needs to be a better harmony between the NGD and the provincial gambling board. That's something that the administrators are already aware of. It's something that we've discussed with them. And I think that the policy around electronic bingo needs to be finalized as soon as possible, and that plan that you indicated by the first quarter of 2015, and I hear that you're saying by the end of April. And so it's something that we need to fast track as soon as possible. Thank you.
Thank you. Let's try and keep it to frame of everyone. Right. Honourable. Thank you, Chairperson. Can I just, Minister, I really want to support you. I think the time is now for us to discuss and to decide which mode of the gambling industry is in the best interest of the company and investment and creating jobs. So I think the time has arrived for us to have that discussion. And then make the choices, because if we don't make the choices, I don't think we will be eventually successful. On slide number 9, you're making reference to a number of legal firms. Will we eventually have that list of the legal firms? I think that is important, so that if there was irregular actions on their side, so that it could go through to the various law societies for them to investigate further. And then, the credit card, when balls running credit cards, I know in the DTI there's lots of balls. Is it sort of a policy that you allow them to run credit cards? Because a credit card, in this instance, was a very costly overdraft facility, because credit interest and credit cards are high. What is the position with regard to that? And then maybe just when we have done our oversight at the gambling the NDB, we saw in that precinct there were a number of other state entities having leases. So I don't know, maybe you can prompt Public Works to investigate whether there's not more irregular stuff going on in that area. And then finally the new gambling regulator. Is the hope that it will be more cost effective than the NGB?
Thank you very much,
Mr. Okay. Thank you, Chairperson. I just want to welcome the report from the Minister. I just want to know, has the budginess spread throughout the board? Has it affected the functions as determined in sections 33 and 65 of the NGA? So I want to know whether or not it's just the top falling apart, is the whole thing falling apart? But then I'd also like to welcome the Minister's decision to prevent online gambling as far as possible, because fundamentally what we've got is a situation where people are using credit that they don't, money that they don't have, to risk to lose some more, and we've got an indebted country anyway, and I think preventing them using the banking system to get payouts is a good initiative, as it's potentially that to support gambling is to make money, and then they're not going to be able to access that money now.
So
that's a very good thing. Thank you. If they make money, then they know well they won't be taking a chance. Thank you, Chair. I also welcome, Chair, the measures taken by the Ministry and the Department on the problem which affects the board. And I also, I'll be happy if we can treat it with a sense of urgency, the moving from board to regulatory agency. And so that quickly would be, of course, I know, Minister, you are still in this process, you have not concluded that this forensic investigation is not yet concluded. But more, I agree on, we have as a country to really have policy choices. We can't just have everything, especially in a country poor as this one, with the majority of people so poor, and who become so vulnerable on these other forms of gambling. So to me, if we can immediately get into that review, I'm sure in the committee we'll be ready to do that, and put it in the public domain and debate it and make sure that we actually send around those forms of government which give, you know, growth to the economy, they contribute to that growth and contribute to the creation of jobs. Because all others, if we are going to be, especially for Black families, teachers, physicians, if we allow, I think there must be a serious discussion with provinces. If we allow these bingos to spread around, some MPs, minister, they know that MPs who are so addicted to gambling, and at the end of the month, what are you doing with your money if you don't have money now? Children and groceries, and you can't pay them. But I know in our issues of poor people who think instead of working and taking your money, can make more money. So I think it's our role as government to inform them of what is happening and the danger. So to me, the sooner we deal with those measures and we're able to, because you know this online gambling is going to be a problem for our people, poor people especially. You must know there are all these scams around in the country. And if people get involved in that without protection, we're going to see many problems and conflicts. So I would encourage that there must be an information going to those who are involved in that. That they're not protected. And in any case, you might find yourself getting into illegal gambling without knowing. So I agree with that. The last one, I think we should maybe as a committee also go to this and make sure that as a committee we are able to assist the department in making sure that there's this awareness about gambling events. Because I don't think the majority of the provincial South Africa, especially the poor people, understand the implications of this, of gambling. I think when you gamble, it automatically make money. Thank you.
On all matters of gambling there too. And what
we found interesting this. We were under the impression that we would be a unique, you know, a country unique in the setup to ban online. We really thought that. We were told how dangerous it was. But I can't recall all the countries that do ban. But I believe they still continue to ban us, and then they're not third world countries. They're first world countries. And it would be useful for us to get some insight again with respect to the policy, and I think Timothy could do this, as to how such countries are able effectively to enforce that. You have referred to, well, you know, with respect to money laundering, all of this, you know, we'll work with Treasury, and we understand that they won't be able to benefit from wins, if you like, that kind of thing. But I think that would be quite helpful to us. The other issue is, yes, the proliferation of bingo halls. And we can see where it would be very important for the DTI to, you know, establish and see that the appointments of the new board members are people with high state of integrity and who find some sort of undertaking that they would not get involved in any way whatsoever in gambling at all, personally, as it were. And that, you know, with respect to the leader, that there was no relationship between any of the members to disqualify the good government. The last comment I want to make is this issue around the shredding of documents, which regrettably is a practice used both in business and in the public sector when certain challenges arise. And I think it is a matter where serious sanctions should be developed in this regard, because it's far more serious than we imagine. Thank you.
Let me answer some of the questions. Maybe the team wants to come in as well. And let me stop by saying that I made it clear when I gave the presentation, I'm going to make absolutely no comment or no hint at any of the individuals that are mentioned in the forensic investigation, whether they are or not. I'm not going to make any. But just to say that when you get the final set of recommendations, we will respond to those and whatever is required. We are not in the business of shielding anybody if they have been doing anything that's wrong. So I think that's the way I would respond to that. Then the question of why was it allowed for so long? Well, I think it is a question of detection, oversight by us, by all the various oversight bodies and so on. Let me say that for quite a while, when I have interacted, I think I should probably start by saying that I think my role as executive authority is more of the strategic and policy side, and the accounting officer is the DG, and the institution of agency management in its office is more in the, if you want, nuts and bolts administration side. So my interactions with him over many, many years were expressing concerns about the weakness in person and the inability of the board to deal with those matters. I used to sit with them and take out my laptop and say, how come it says here, just like that site, the other site, you can gamble online in South Africa. Who authorized that? What are you doing about it? That was my kind of take with them. And I think that at the end of the day, what we came up with is an analysis to identify that enforcement has been woefully weak. That's been the reality. But when we get indications coming from whistleblowers or official reviews, like the Auditor General, we don't hesitate to act. I think that's really what it is. I think we have drawn from this a view that we need to strengthen agency management in the DTI. We have drawn from that. Most of the problems and issues we have with companies are with the entities. So let me just say, sitting next to the DG, he's a very militant fellow called Sibuza Tombo. You may know him. He's very strong on this matter. He's now acting chief director in the agency management team. That's an impasse. In fact, it's just to strengthen agency management, because I think that this is something that is emerging from all of this. The other thing that I've learned, and it's almost like a red rag to the bull, when somebody pleads with me for
strong independence of voice, I started to ask a question. And that was a discourse I was beginning to have with Hans McGann. That they needed to be independent, they told me they needed to be independent so they could do their work. I was back off, we'd start to have much oversight, all of that kind of stuff was what we had. And then, you know, it's a retro book, but I was looking, what's wrong with the team? And we start to delve in. So I think we could all say, including Parliament, which signed off on audit reports and annual reports on the audit from public entities year after year, that we missed things. But then when we found it, we don't hesitate to act. I think that's what I want to say. Then let me say about the question of the building. And the fundamental issue there is that they're too much space. And that is one of the reforms they want to do is get rid of the space and somebody else can take it. As you say, there are a number of other public entities that are there, and you can tell you that's one of the pieces of work that's there, but then how did we end up with this contract? And the forensic issue. Let me say also that, you know, when you embark on this block, let's not imagine that suddenly everybody's on your side. That the press is batting for you, that the courts are in your batting for you. It doesn't work like that. What is the pushback? I don't know if you saw the pushback covered in press articles from the members of the of board. The pushback was, Rob Davies doesn't want electronic gambling, that's why he's fighting with us. That was the pushback. Well, there's a forensic investigation. Nothing to do with that. I did have a criticism of him. I put through a 2-week on illegal gambling, not just this, but everything else. Now, I think that we've got to understand that there is a constitution and the powers of provinces and the relationship between gambling and provincial revenue. This is the heart of the issue. We're not going to try and change the constitution. We've got to live with it. But we have to understand what we're living with. What we're living with is that one of the two sources of provincial home revenue is gambling. Is gambling licenses. One of the two sources. So there's a propensity for provinces to want to do the maximum rollout to get provincial revenue. Now, whether we should have made this link is something that Mr. Arthur, those people, I was one of them, I suppose, but Mr. Arthur, those people who were dropped in the Constitution. But that is the reality that we've got. But so we have, if you look around the provinces, you'll see big, powerful entities, often bigger and more important than the departments of local economic development and whatever else is in the portfolio of the NEC. Often bigger and stronger is the Provincial Gambling Board, with a strong propensity to want to roll out the next one. That's what we've got. That's what the electronic bingo episode is about. It's about that fundamental. And then we're supposed to have a National Gambling Board with oversight coordination and actually taking limits. Well, this one didn't do it. They didn't do it. Not adequately. And I think that although they did raise this electronic bingo, I think that we've been trying to have this discussion, and I think we're getting a bit of traction. And I believe you're going to engage with some of the provincial MEGs as well. I think we're beginning to get some treasure and some understanding. It's true that all kinds of electronic bingo with the look and feel of casino have been rolled out in all sorts of places. We need to stop that and where we can, roll it back. I think that is what we need. Because if we're going to have every shopping center as a casino, it's going to be the actual casinos, but it's also going to be undesirable in the shopping centres. I think that's the point I'm making. Now let's just say about the choices. There are many, many, many vested interests around in South Africa. Many groups that are running around lobby like that. One of the weaknesses of the gambling board is highly they were listening to all of this all the time. It's too much and too little. I'm trying to step above this. Now, when I'm saying about the casinos, I'm not betting for the casinos. I'm not serving casino associates. I'm not betting for the racing industry. I'm trying to make an analysis, objective analysis, of what is most beneficial in this market. That's what I'm trying to do. Not that I think everything's rosy with the casinos. I happen to have gone to an activity one of them the other night. And I thought I was driving past. I saw there's a within very short distance, there's a pawn shop. And it's saying, you know, you can bring your cell phone and probably the department staff on, and you can pawn it. So once you've run out of money in the casino, you can go there, and you can go and pawn them and go back and hang out with it. That sort of thing. Now we need to regulate that kind of stuff. We're supposed to have already regulations about ATMs. But if you go to one of them, you'll see there ATMs everywhere. We need to tighten that up. We do need to tighten that up. They're not supposed to bust people in. They do. We need to tighten that up. So I don't think everything's perfect in the casinos. But certainly, internet cafes, which is what we're looking at. Internet cafes at every little street corner, it's not designed. It's not designed. You know, at one stage there was some idea which looked at the LPMs. The LPMs were supposed to be, to allow empowerment. That was what it was in ownership. That was becoming interpreted as in some of the provinces that the majority of LPMs must be located in historically disadvantaged areas. We said, what nonsense is that? What absolute nonsense is that? Ownership is one thing, but the market is another thing. They mustn't be targeting the prey on low-income people. I think this is the issue that we've got there. Now,
limited payout machines.
These are one of the modes that is allowed. What happens is that you can put in a maximum of $5,000 and you can get a maximum of $500,000. That's what it is. And they're supposed to be in taverns, and you have a few of them in taverns. One of the other things that I've been told is that we are getting LPM shares with large number of machines. And that's another thing that we're going to have to take into account. So I think that we begin to have a more realistic conversation with the provinces. And I would welcome that, because I think that this is where we need to go. We need to draw some line somewhere. Now, you asked, Jim, does every jurisdiction say that because there's online gambling in the United Kingdom, in part of the United States, and so on, that it's inevitable that it goes everywhere? Well, Singapore has decided, Singapore has decided to ban it. I mean, a much more draconian way than I'm proposing. Much more draconian way. Big fines and things like that. That's what they propose. China. If you want to gamble in China, you go to Macau. That's what you do. You don't go to millions of bingo machines in Beijing, nor do they have online gambling. They just go back. Where there's a website, they sell it. It's not a foregone conclusion that anything goes. We have to draw a line somewhere. If we don't draw a line somewhere, then we might as well accept that we don't have what the Honorable Thomas said. Lots of people doing all kinds of gambling. Lots and lots of poor people, because I think that it's the same with alcohol. We have in South Africa, we have a certain number of people who are alcoholics, addicted people, and then we have a bigger alcohol abuse problem. I think we've got the same in South Africa gambling. We have a certain number of people who are actually people who are addicted gamblers, and then we have a lot of problem gambling beyond that. Yeah, poor people who shouldn't put their social grants into the LPS, but we do because they're persuaded it's a solution to their financial problems, and it's not. I mean, the committee that if the gambling industry is honest, will tell you, is that they make their money off your losings. And if you don't lose, they lose. And they win all the time. They win. Why do people want to license so badly? Because they win all the time. You don't win. You don't make money out of gambling. It's supposed to be an entertainment, and it's supposed to be discretionary money. That's how you want to enjoy yourself, putting your money in a slot machine or playing the cards. That's the way it is. So I wanted to say that I think that we're in a better space to have these debates now. I think it's very, very important that Parliament, the Portfolio Committee, but also the Parliament and also the NCOP, that is part of this debate. And let's take some decisions about what we want, what we don't want. Let those decisions not be based on us being lobbied by some vested interest group is running around and wanting to help us all, writing bills for us maybe even. Let's not get into that space. That's what I wanted to say. So let me stop here and see whether Luigi wants to add anything.
Thanks. I think Minister has covered the issue about the roles and functions of the board as ETAP. I think we deal with the issue about the building lease, and that I think there was a question about what DTI officials involved. I think let me start by explaining that we need to revisit the governance model or the, you know, what is one considers a deregulated model, where the boards have, in a sense, independence from government. In terms of the PFMA, the board is the accounting authority, which means it is of equal status to the DTI, the accounting officer. And then they are only then accountable to the minister, and they have their own audits by the Auditor General. So they don't fall under the DTI audit. So they are independently audited, which means that we have very little, let's say, direct powers to intervene. The only facility we have to intervene very directly is if there are transgressions and wrongdoing. So that's why, as soon as we were shown in terms of the Auditor General's report that there was irregular expenditure, there was governance issues and so on, that is why we immediately launched the investigation. So we have been just trying to use whatever powers we have, or let's say influences we have. So we have used the shareholder compact, where over the past 2-3 years we have asked, we have put one of the DTI officials onto some of the audit committees of the these agencies. But even then, because those audit committees are again appointed by boards, they have resisted our efforts to put DTI officials onto those boards. And they have used the PFMA to give them the powers that they are of equivalent authority to, for example, the accounting officer, and that they don't fall, let's say, under the control of DTI. I think that's why we're saying, let's have a trading entity. Once they have that status, then they are no longer the accounting authority. Then they fall directly under the DTI. And then, therefore, they are part of our audit, part of our internal audit, and part of our governance processes. And I think, as you can see, DTI is consistently had a clean audit. We're moving towards a really significant goal, almost eliminating the regulatory expenditure. But we have at least strong governance processes in place. So in terms of, this year, there are no DTI officials involved in the lease of that building. The only accusation has been about some internal staff of the NGB who is part of the report. And as the minister said, that there are individuals involved, they must get a copy of the report, and they must be allowed to comment before we disclose to Parliament or publicly those individuals involved. But that matter is still under consideration. So there are no accusations against any DTI officials involved in that. It's only the members of the DTI. Yeah. And then just finally, to deal with the incense issue, that is a very old contract that was, I think, entered into in 2001. So the old contract and so on, we as the department now, we have instructed that we try to get a better share, a more equitable share of the revenue that's generated by that incense. But in any event, we're also saying that we must have an RFP process, we must put out a tender for a new process so that we can then renegotiate the contract or set better terms, and we can have a bit more equitable share of the incense. That's the electronic management system that's in the gambling. So we are going to improve that system. We will have, over the next 12 months or so, we will be conducting a new, let's say, RFP process. Thanks.
Yes, I think we're asking for a little clarification there, but allow Honourable McPherson to just request a clarification first.
Thanks, Chair. It's quite important because I'm surprised to hear Mr. Alfredo's response that no DTI officials are being investigated in terms of the lease, because the lease was signed by, I have the copy of the lease, it was signed by the DTI. So surely, whoever signed that lease did not do a sufficient due diligence into the requirements of the lease, and B, the rental that was being paid. So I'm concerned to hear that no DTI official was being investigated into that. I want to endorse what Mr. Octo was saying about the RFP. I think that is vitally important that it is reconfigured to benefit the DTI and the NGD, so I certainly welcome that.
Right, let us just go back to yourself, DT, on that one. The end thing, I must say, I thought you said is something else. So it's the National Electronic Monitoring System that we're talking about.
Right, you just
this is the benefit of all members. This is on the limited pay opportunities. It was one of the conditions. They were all supposed to be stuck linked up in electronic monitoring with the ability, if they are transgressing, to turn them off. Actually, that's supposed to be the ability.
Again, as I explained, I mean, to repeat, there's absolutely no the wrongdoing, the whistleblowing, and so on. There are no DTI officials that have ever been mentioned for any wrongdoing. As I said, even with the overall signing of the lease, DTI did not conduct an end process. That was done by the NGB and overseen by the board. As I said, the board would sign off on any leases which they are the accounting authority. So the DTI does not oversee governance processes, does not ensure that procurement processes are done. As I said, it's only now that they become a trading entity, or now that we have our own administrators there, that is the point when we will now run these processes.
So that's clarified now,
Honourable Mayor. Maybe that's serious, but I think we're going to get around the circle.
No. But it's just a pity because you didn't share that with the committee, you see. And, you know, I don't want to go down the street too often, but I have stated at the beginning when we came back in this term that we need to work in a far more collegiate manner if we are going to actually achieve results as a committee. And I think that the entire committee has been concerned about the activities of the National Gambling Board. Hasn't been individual or one party. So it may have been more constructive if we had all had the same information and there was a symmetry, you know, and that kind of thing. And I do want to really appeal to members. Let's try and work together with information is power. And I don't think anyone wants to play a power game here. But yes, Honourable Clark.
Chairperson, can I request that we have see a copy of that lease? And you know in what capacity it was signed by DTI officials. You know, there is many ways to sign agreements, and I would like to see and unpack it legally a little bit. You know,
I just wanted to clarify that with regard to the NGB's lease. By the way, we are not the accounting authority, and we don't sign it. The NGB used to be on the DTI campus. We were then the landlord sometimes of the NGB. So, I mean, that is a completely different, that is where we're the landlord, and then we lease it to the Competition Commission, we lease to other places and so on. So the governance, as I said, there's a PFMA matter, they are independently audited. If whatever tenders they issue, the Auditor General audits them every year and then sign off on it. And even in terms of that lease, I think the Auditor General brought to us attention some issues that we have to follow up with regard to that lease.
I think it's very important this point, E.G. It really is, because the committee raised the issue of this very extensive, you know, and I mean everyone agrees. 10 years, I think it is, huge amounts of money paid. But that was not when DTI were the landlords, when they lived on the campus, when they were the cases there. They moved because they wanted grander premises, and those grander premises led to that. So I think we must make that distinction. So we shouldn't have a grey area here at all in this regard. But I think that, you know, Parliament does need to look at its culture. And I really point all my fingers in my own direction, because I certainly chaired the last committee, and I'm now in chair again. And I think the committee must be far more rigorous. And now everyone walks out when you're asking them to be rigorous. One must be on record. We must be far more rigorous to interrogating the AG's findings and not make snap decisions. Oh, well, it's not quite right, you know. Oh, well, it's not this. It's okay. It's okay. And we are trying to do that because we, as a committee, because we have such a huge volume and so many entities. So we only want to look at the rent. And unfortunately, then it's too late when you're looking at the rent. So there are things that we said we must interrogate. What are your governance arrangements? And unpack it. Two, what are issues like the lease? How often do you meet?
And what is the authority between yourselves and the ministry or department? How is it established? What are the obligations here? We haven't unpacked this. And I think that is where we ought to be going in this regard and interrogating all their actions against the mandate itself. And the other thing which I wish to correct, and the person, I'm going to introduce you back again, Honourable MacPherson, thank you. I wasn't only referring to you then, but all the committee members, especially from the previous committee, but I'm glad you are now, because the reality is in Durban, and you would probably know better than any of us, simply because that is your first or primary residence, is that they could be rolling it out without permission, many of these things. They're certainly not that they even got valid licenses. So I don't want the impression created that the minister has issued, you know, hundreds of licenses. He's coming in as the MC to actually explain the situation in Durban, or AZN, as it currently prevails, and the challenges, which is why she has suspended the provincial gambling board. And I must make that clear, and I know you support that approach yourself, Honourable MacPherson. Is that so? Honourable MacPherson.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted, just for clarity, just in case anyone gets confused, I've never said that any provincial board is rolling out and you know, allowing these things to go without licenses. I mean, the ones in Gateway and Sandton City, and those are licenses, whether they were obtained through the board or through the K board or through KZN through dubious means. They still have licenses, whether they're valid or not, is up to the court's support at the moment. But I think the problem is that they are taking place with no policy framework that governs them on a national level. And I think that we're simply in agreement with the minister. We're meeting each other on this point, that there needs to be a policy, because I don't want them in the shopping centre that I go to. I don't want to see them near my base of worship or where my kids go to school or anything like that. So, you know, we're going to back them on it. But it's something that we need to act on faster, so we stop it in its tracks.
So we're all in agreement on that. Let me just take on this answer. Yes, Honourable Mayor.
No, Chair, I never thought of this as a situation, but there's one thing that irritates me. That when someone is fit to pick up his head, this is it. And if the person on the podium is on the board, cannot be in order of
it. In fact, I do agree on that, and we must, it's all about, of course, respecting people's dignity and privacy and so on. Let's all work on that one, all of us. Yes, Minister.
I want to make two points. Let me start over. I mean, I think the Minister of the County Board can probably give more details, maybe even the DG. But the question of electronic bingo, it is that there were a number of court cases and there was also this technology. I think it tells us. I mean, you know, you have a technological change, how do we react? So it was the things that I think in the phrase goes out, the look and feel of a casino machine, and they are then getting bingo licenses. And it started off in Gauteng. And the board there, I think, allowed a few of them. And then at one stage, we went to court. I think we lost. I then had what I call a ceasefire with one of the ABCs. They said they wouldn't roll them out anymore in Gauteng. And then they started being rolled out in other provinces. That's kind of where we are at this. And I think that we've now got, and I just want to reinforce what the chair said, the ABC Belinda Scott, I think, is very, very aware of the negative implications of this. She's coming here, I understand this year. She's coming next week to the Portfolio Committee. And I think you'll see that there's a concern there, because the allegation, I can only say, the allegation is that they were licenses given, but they were not given with all the requisite authority. She'll have to explain that. I think that's where we are. The other point I really wanted to make was to say that I think it's very important for members of the committee to understand how is it that we as a minister can exercise oversight over the entities. Because it gets back to another one of the regrets to me,
is that when somebody says they do not have to go through DTI and the agency management units, that's what that what people say. They must come and talk to me, Rob David, at the end of the story. Now, we've had that lots and lots of times, and I've even batted this one out in relation to all of these entities. It cannot be like that because I need a structure in place. If I don't use the DTI's agency management, then what's going to happen is I have to create something similar in my office, which will be another lot of use as a wasteful expenditure and duplication. So you may hear from time to time that sort of thing. What is the DTI doing interfering in this or that board when as the DG explained, there was separate accounting authority? Whenever anybody raises that, it is a sense of regret me because I have never come across anybody who argues that because they want to do the job better.
Right.
They argue that because they've got something to hide. So, I'm interested in anybody's in it. The second thing, the agency management due to the DTI has got my authority to exercise the oversight that is the structure in place. And I've said already, one of the lessons we've learned from this and others is that we need to jack up the role of the agency management here. We need to improve it. It's where it continues to improve. And as I mentioned, that's one example. I think that is what is our response. We want agency management to be strong, effective, and to identify problems at an early stage. It is true, all of us. If we spotted this 3 years ago, we would have been better off. We've acted when we spotted it. We acted when we have indications that we need to act. But of course, what triggers an action has got to be something substantial as well. We do have cases where whistleblowers have got personal agendas. Whistleblowers have a personal gripe against somebody else. And they come along and make a series of allegations which they can't sustain afterwards. It's one of the things if anybody wants to release corruption, you've got to be willing to follow them through. You can't just come along and say, it's corrupt, there's all hell in there, and then you come along and you make a big noise about it, expect me to fire it, right? Those people got rights. We've got to do a proper forensic investigation, establish the facts, and act on the facts. And I mean, that's what I'm just saying, that's my commitment as long as I'm a minister. To act in that way. Maladministration, corruption weakens the institution, doesn't help us. We have no interest whatsoever in allowing people who are corrupt to get away with it, allowing people who are maladministering, even if it's not corrupt, maladministering institutions to carry on doing so because it means that they are weaker and less effective in the task that they are responsible for. So I just wanted to make those points as well. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Minister. It's not my intention to prevent people from taking their tea, but this was and is a very serious matter. And it is something we are going to ensure we close off this year and get this fresh piece of legislation. We want to support you, Minister. You've seen all the members who agree that you need to bring in all these former boards or even current boards who are dealing with regulatory issues right back into the fold, into DTI, where a tight track can be kept on them, as it were. And one must go back, I think, to entertain the idea of trading entity. I think we all agree on that for some time, and we look forward to the presentation of the policy and hope we can get that as soon as possible. We're going to take just a mini break. Really, 3 minutes. How long does it take you to get a cup of coffee? We'll be back in 5 minutes. All right, we've seen a lot of you buzzing out. Thank you. Thank you.
compared to the 312 for the whole year. But the question comes, why was that overspent on in the second quarter? And if you see that amount in the third quarter, it has been adjusted. I think the reason for that adjustment would have been welcomed in the committee. Secondly, when we saw the ST at the time of the beautiful art process, one of the challenges that the committee still has was that you have a challenge with roll-up of people machines and other illegal gambling activities. And the NGV mentioned that those can only be addressed when more staff and funding has been put in place. The question then would come as the NGV still outlines that there's not sufficient staff. And what is the NGV doing about that? Secondly, you in the second report, you mentioned an issue of a self-funding model. If the NGV could please explain that to the committee, what that would entail. Thank you.
Let me apologize to the committee here, but I have no doubt the report was forwarded to me. You will remember on Monday last week I indicated I wouldn't have a laptop for a week due to certain challenges with it that my PT were addressing. So I do apologize. I certainly didn't pick up the research report on this. So that may be helpful, and we asked Mr. Herman to forward that report to all of you from our own research in this regard, and to make the detailed documents which were given to the committee, secretary, to yourselves as well by Tuesday. Any further clarification on the administrator side, the co-administrators, go ahead and then we'll turn in to members.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just a clarification with regards to the overspending that appears on the second quarter report, specifically with relation to the board fees. I think we reported earlier on, Chairperson, when we appeared before committee in October, that there were more meetings than planned. And as a result, that resulted in the budget on board members being exceeded. And we then went back, and I think in this presentation, in the overview, in the summary, we indicated that we then had to go and relook at the budget and reprioritize the budget, revise it, and then it got approved in November, as indicated in the third quarter report. And in reviewing that chapter, we were looking at items that were unrestrained, that as you would recall, we're not actually allowed to budget for deficit. So as we prioritized, we looked at where we had savings, moved the money accordingly to cover for that over expenditure. That's what has happened between the second quarter and the third quarter. Hence, in the third quarter, we do not have, and we're not paying any further fees on the board members. And then that's the reprioritization, yes, we just briefly highlighted in the executive summary that after that reprioritization of the budget and approval, subsequent approval thereof, that's when we are at this stage where if you look at the slide of the budget, we are saying we are projecting by the end of the year that we would have a rather saving of 1,059,000 as opposed to what we were reporting in second quarter that we would as an entity exceed the budget if things were to continue in the manner in which they were continuing. So that is basically what has happened and the clarity that can be provided with regard to that overspending and buy from now carrying in the third quarter. It's one of those measures that we said we are going to put into place to ensure that the entity comes through with a balanced budget at the end of the financial year. My colleague Kiran will just deal with the next two clarifications.
Thank you,
Chair.
The vacancies and filling in of course is one of the items that definitely would have impacted on the budget. The actions we implemented during the third quarter when we came to office was to advertise the vacant position. However, we've had to tread carefully so as not to lead the entity into another deficit. So that is what I meant by indicating that we have to then reprioritize and we find certain critical holes, which we have reported to the committee before, and actually listed the number of holes that indeed, and they are in the compliance so that builds the enforcement to immediately be filled. With regards to the self-funding model, it's actually in the reference to the National Central Electronic Monitoring System. It was discussed in the during Minister's presentation, where through the procurement process, we're trying to improve basically revenue for the NGV, and we hope that the resultant effect of contractual arrangements between the NGV and the next operator would enhance basically revenue for the National Gambling Board, and that basically what we were referring to as trying to come up with a self-funding model.
Thank you very much. Do you have any other questions or comments? Oh yes, Mr. Bellini.
So just to add on what Caroline is saying around the self-funding model, this is informed by the provision in the Act that NGB should and can collect about 6% of the cross-gambling revenue. And that's how, as Caroline indicated, that in the next operator, we should be able to then self-fund from that perspective.
Thank you, Ethan.
Thanks, Mr. Bellini. It's great to see you guys back again. I think that you certainly, yourself and Caroline, have brought great heaviness to the rocky ship, and you have our full support in what you're doing. When you talk about the 6% of cross revenue, are you referring just to the potential revenue from the NGEP contracts, or is that are you seeing a sort of a wider opportunity to become self-funding? And while we're on the topic of that, I mean, when are you looking to read off the RFP for engines so that you would then be able to allocate what sort of a budget you would receive from that, really? But that may take place once the RFP is issued and that whole process. So if you could just let me know where you are with that, that would be grateful. Thanks.
Thank you very much. I just have one question myself. It's to do with this the illegal gambling operator register, which has been raised here on several occasions. It certainly would appear that the board would not have approved it because they were already suspended in September. So what's the status of the functional illegal gambling operator register? It was on track, and then it required approval. What is the status of anything the board is required to approve? Who will be undertaking the approval, or will that be there'll be a moratorium on that kind of thing, or what?
No. Thank you, Jefferson. Regarding the self-funding model, we are looking at in the National Gambling Regulations, there's reference to collection of 6% of gross gambling revenue from the LGM industry. So that's specifically what we're looking into. The legislation basically does not provide for collection of revenue by the National Gambling Board from the other members, as indicated earlier on. Provinces basically rely on revenue from all taxes that are collected from the other members, and that's the revenue that they then rely on. Section 27 of the Act deals with the Central Electronic Monitoring System, and that's what we then refer to. So, till there is any changes in legislation we actually meeting with respect to what is contained in legislation. Pertaining to the illegal operator module, what we're trying to explain is at the time when we came into office, the NGB have the national registry, there are various models. The models relate to devices, machines. The module then that was in process in being developed for erasure of illegal operators. That process has to go through a procurement process. At the point in time we were then briefed on the matter, the officials informed us that they held back on the procurement process due to the bad financial state of the entity, and they were trying to ensure the problem that was discussed. I'm kind of in occasion of saying that as we've been projecting, we have then given instructions to the officials to proceed with this procurement. They have not reverted that guarantee. We're not sure whether they'll finish the procurement process evaluation and adjudication by the end of the financial year, which is in 2 weeks' time, but basically that's the status of it.
Probably the Renzik report went a long way to addressing a number of issues and the oversight visits which we conducted ourselves in that regard. But I think what is really we must lend you on is that you are taking steps to ensure that you address the what was identified as permanent over expenditure and a deficit in that regard, and it was identified earlier on, even as early as your first appearance with us. And you are addressing it. It's not effectively addressed yet, but the steps are in there. I think that's important. And the other issue is, given the what we've already heard from the Minister and the DG, and that you know, the future management of this may become a new animal. You know, we're not looking at a board again. This seems to be very much an in transition kind of period. And we will need to keep on track closely with both yourself, Minister, the DDG down there on the operational detail, and yourself, DG, so that we are directly in the loop. And no doubt we're likely to see this in policy coming up, and legislation and so on. So that's how I'm beginning to see it. And, you know, by the end of the year, we can expect these matters to be resolved. That's how I'm hearing, you know, the information. Is that correct? Is that the target? Is that what we're looking at, Minister?
Of course, to change it from a board to regulator, we have to change the legislation, so it'll depend on your good self. Yeah.
No, I think this is one area we do agree with. We agree on so far the principle of the policy that we've heard, and I think most of us have begun to realise from the NCC's days the challenges one can experience in this kind of entity. So let us leave it there and not prolong the meeting. I'd like to thank you for all coming down with us here and sharing the information with us directly in this regard. We won't be undertaking another oversight until we have legislation on the table, but we hope to track you down again quarterly, etc., which I think we capture in almost the solar in a sense. You know, the solar would have brought that all on track. We may not deal directly with the fourth quarterly, that's the point I'm making, and go straight to the first quarterly to link up with the angle of this. Just so that you have an idea of our schedule. We're not going to be calling you down every month. All right. Okay. Members, we just need to correct something in future. You'll see here, thank you very much, DTI. Thank you, DG. Thank you to the DDG and all the members, co-administrators, chief directors, etc. Thank you. The members of the committee what we should have made clear to you all along on the agendas is that before you get the quarterly briefing from DTI, the research will address you, and that research report, I'm looking at Mr. Whittington now, it's made sure that it gets out to members the day before they walk into the committee, so that we've all got it. For example, Mr. Williams doesn't have a laptop either at the moment. So let's not rely solely on electronics with some members. Please, I think I'm going to make that very clear. Make sure that they do have all the documentation. And maybe you can just note Mr. Herman's on that agenda. If you happen to do it, or Mr. Medina does it, the documents that they should bring. So those members who don't have that document can call you in order to obtain a hard copy of the document. So I would imagine, though, that's more my fault, because I myself didn't have a communication system at the time. So thank you very much. And we'll meet again on Tuesday. Please note that it won't be delayed. We've got too many things on that day. It's 9 o'clock to 1:30. May go on to 1:45. We've got a lot of reports to get through and the plastic sector. 1, 2, 3, 4 items. Thank you very much. Thank you.